Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say your
name. Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 18th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, not in the literal nor metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building, but in a secret location. It's Casual Friday, folks. That means that the tech stuff may be a mess. Michael is telling me it's July 19th. Michael's telling me it's July 19th, and Matt is telling me he can't hear anything on the IM. Okay, it's inaudible. All right. I'm going to stop the broadcast. I'm going to try and figure out what's going on, because Michael is telling me it's good. Matt's telling me it's inaudible. I can't... It's somebody else's problem. Somehow Michael hears it quite well. All right. Well, today on the program, Detroit has gone bankrupt, among other things. Well, let's just, we're going to take a quick break. We'll get back with Cliff Schecter and try and figure out if we have any technical problems. All right, we'll be right back after this. Breaking down, literally stop breaking down. So Michael's telling me he's listening on Safari and he's hearing the show, and Matt's telling me that nobody can hear the show. So somebody is lying, and I don't know what the problem is, but in the meantime, on the phone we should have Cliff Schecter here. And hopefully, we're there. Cliff, are you there?
Hell no, I won't go.
There you go. All right, so people are going to have to listen to this, I guess, as a podcast. Big deal. That's what thousands of people do on a daily basis. It's just one of those days. I can't tell you the grief. Anyways, so Cliff, where should we start here this week? I actually think that the I think the Zimmerman stuff, you came on the program Monday with Michael and Matt and spoke about that. Obviously, that was a big story this week. I actually think that the what happened with the filibuster or the lack of the filibuster earlier this week was also a really big story. This was a big win, I think, in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fun to watch the fallout, too. I mean, Mitch McConnell is just getting slapped around everywhere. His own, his own caucus, one of his senators pretended they were a Republican watching the State of the Union and heckled him, yelled out BS at him when he said something because he blamed them for negotiating without him, which is important. They pushed Mitch McConnell aside, and they negotiated a deal. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, just heard some stuff. excuse me. And, this was almost like a Boehner-like loss of control. We thought we didn't have this in the Senate with the Republicans. Apparently we do. There are a number of factions there that are fighting around, too. Which is exemplified, which I think we'll talk about, by the now about-to-begin Rand Paul Liz Cheney proxy battle, which is going to be so much fun. I can't wait. It's going to be like better than Sharknado.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. I might want to get to that, but it is sort of fascinating what's happened. I mean, McConnell is lying that he didn't know about this deal, and we should just remind people exactly what this deal was that Harry Reid essentially said, we're going to pull the nuclear option. It really appeared like he had the votes. And the only way that you're going to stop us from doing this at this point is you have to basically confirm these seven nominees, three to the National Labor Relations Board, the head of the EPA, the head of Import-Export Board, the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and the Labor Secretary.
Right. The one thing there is they had to put two new ones in the NLRB, not the two that had been there on recess appointments, although they'd been there a year and a half at this point, so maybe
yeah, and the reality is that the replacements were even better than the first ones.
Right. I mean, they had to pick. The agreement was that they would put up there whoever he picked. He should have been like, okay, the ghost of Karl Marx and the ghost of Hugo Chavez, just to see if they would allow it, because they'd agreed to allow anything, right? Seriously. You know, I'm in the camp that this is by far the best thing Harry Reid has done in a while. It was a victory in that it's fractured McConnell's caucus. It's made McConnell look like the wimp that he is. It's angered a lot of people on the right at their own leadership, which is always good. And most importantly, it was a victory for good government. In the end, the other side blinked because Reid was actually able to do what we have not seen him do in the past. Whether it was because he was undermined by the president or because he just didn't have the will to do it. But on cases where he only needed to get 51 votes, I think about, reconciliation and getting it for the public option. Or I think about in the past when he threatened to change the rules and said, well, we don't have the votes, whatever. The votes were there this time.
Yep.
Excuse me. And so that was important because that says going forward, the votes are there for this. And I think he should have I'll say quickly, I know you want to jump in. I think he should have hearkened back to 2005, reminded people what Republicans did then to point out this whole this is unprecedented thing was garbage, and pushed the judicial nominees too. That's the only thing I would say to me failed in this, is that I think he should have definitively pushed for the judicial nominees too.
Well, what's interesting to me about this is that I think – what's clear, there were in my estimation, there are two reasons why the Republicans unilaterally disarmed in this situation, is that they are more afraid of there not being a filibuster than there being a filibuster, because they are afraid that if they actually do take control of the Senate in 2 years and they don't have a filibuster, they're going to have to go ahead with the agenda that I think three quarters of their caucus doesn't actually believe in, that they're actually going to have to do things like attempt to, get rid of the Commerce Department or whatever it is. They're actually going to have to go forward with this agenda because they're not going to have any excuses.
Right. Well, you know, when Eric Cantor in the House, like a classic example, had offered, and they got in their battle. He fought with Kevin McCarthy, who was the whip there, and because he had offered an actual bill, even though it was terrible, to sort of semi-replace Obamacare with these high-risk pools that he was creating. I don't know all the details. But the point is, it was so overwhelmingly rejected, people freaked out on the Republican side because they were actually, you know, legislating, that they ended up pulling the bill from the floor without a vote. So the point is that, you know, they do claim now and again that they're actually for some things, but there aren't really any policies they're for that they could actually vote on. And you're right. They'd actually have to vote for sort of theoretically for positive things that would spend some government money on something other than defense or, you know, setting up Checkpoint Charlie across the southern border every 10 miles. And they don't want to do that. And so you're right. And then they would have to step into things like going after the Commerce Department or the Education Department, which would add to the zealotry they've already shown on so many other issues. So, there you are.
It's interesting. And it's just also, I think it's going to embolden the Democrats in the Senate, don't you think?
Well, Democrats overall, but it particularly seems to have emboldened the ones that really still want filibuster reform. Tom Udall and Senator Merkley and others after this said, no, this isn't the end. We need a talking filibuster. We need that reform. And they're still pushing for it. So I think it emboldens them to push for more procedural good government changes. And I think, yeah, it'll get them to push for hopefully more legislation and other things. Doesn't mean these guys can't still filibuster, right, but it shined a light on it. And if they're still filibustering everything, particularly the judge appointees, there's no reason why the Democrats can't revisit this. So
exactly.
I think the technical phrase is they have their balls in a ringer.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, it really is. I think sort of for me, it's encouraging to see on some level. All right, now let's talk about what's happening because it is definitely more fun to talk about the hot Republican on Republican action. There were two stories this week.
Whenever I think of Mike Enzi and Liz Cheney, I think hot.
Well, it's Enzi and Cheney, which seems to be sort of. Well, let's talk about that first before we get into what's going on with somebody taking on Grover Norquist as well in the Republican Party. But
that's right. It's some of the the thing is, that's why I kind of made that little segue before. It's not divorced from what's been going on in the Senate. In the Senate, you've got, you know, McCain, the neocon, fighting with Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, calling them wacko birds, creative. And they're in sort of a pitched battle because the neocons, let's face it, if you remember, you know, in 2008, Fox News was openly mocking Ron Paul, and people like Rudy Giuliani were going on and saying this guy isn't even a Republican and not taking him seriously. Like, they were mocking that almost, you know, that small wing of the party. Now those are the guys actually who are basically running things. I mean, Mitch McConnell, After Rand Paul won in his home state over his handpicked guy by 23 points, you know, Mitch McConnell has Rand Paul's whole campaign team running his reelection. He's given in. So it's the isolationism now has the upper hand over the neocons, and the neocons are freaked about it. And they don't have really at this point. McCain's like 137 years old and is angry about people being on his lawn. Lindsey Graham is the usually hysterical Lindsey Graham. They don't really have a great spokesperson standing up there for their crazy neocon beliefs. They think Lynn Cheney would be that. And so clearly, you know, even though Enzi voted for the Iraq war, he's also someone that came out when Rand Paul did his filibuster on drones and congratulated him. He sort of probably falls somewhere between those two things. And Wyoming is a Western state that has a lot more sort of libertarianism to it. And so, So really, it's not that Liz Cheney, you know, has any real justification for running. She was a low-level functionary in the Bush administration because of who her dad is. She's never really accomplished anything on her own, but her name's Cheney, so she can move to Wyoming after spending her entire life in Virginia like 20 minutes ago and run. But again, that's what's behind it. It's the neocons pushing her. So immediately Rand Paul jumped in and said, I thought she'd be running from her home state of Virginia, which was funny.
Right.
And then said he would do whatever he could for NZ and all of the congressional caucus out there. So let me break this down. You've got two splits as I can see it right now. You've got the neocon faction behind Liz Cheney, and then the more, you want to call it paleoconservative, you want to call it isolationist faction that is behind Rand Paul, or behind Mike Enzi, like the Rand Paul, you know, and so there you've got that fight going on. So it's sort of Rand Paul versus Liz Cheney, and then the other interesting sort of split you've got going on. Sean Hannity endorsed Liz Cheney this morning. A bunch of other of the Fox personalities have. The entertainment complex, which has gotten the Republicans into so much trouble because they say crazy things for controversy that don't tend to work in elections, have gotten behind Cheney, whereas all the actual electeds are supporting Enzi and saying, you know, this isn't the right race, this isn't the time, and even, in Rand Paul's case, have gotten a little more obnoxious. But Cynthia Loomis, also the state house, House member from Wyoming, ripped into Cheney and said, you know, somebody who hasn't even gotten a paycheck here shouldn't be running here. And Barrasso, the other senator from Wyoming, is supporting Enzi and, you know, a whole bunch of other people. So you've got that split, too, the entertainers versus the Pauls. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And I mean, just harking back. So what do we see? I mean, what is McCain making these deals part of that? I mean, McCain, now there's also a report that McCain is one of the senators, apparently, that President Obama or at least administration officials are meeting in an attempt to get, and I can't even believe that we're still talking about this, the grand bargain going again. I mean, what is going on with McCain? Like, I know the reason why this guy does not want the filibuster to go away, because the filibuster, in many respects, is a huge what's the word I'm looking at? This is what empowers him in many respects, right? I mean, the filibuster. Because it allows an individual senator to basically hold out and say, I'm taking my ball home and I'm going away. What's going on with him? I mean, because he's obviously a neocon. He would like us to be attacking as many countries as possible at any given time. Where is he on this divide? He's obviously he's obviously fighting back. I guess he's sort of aligned more with the Cheneyites.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he hasn't come out and vocally, that I've seen, said he's for Liz Cheney and supports her. I have to assume he and Lindsey Graham will support her. I could be wrong. I don't know his relationship with Enzi, although McCain doesn't tend to have a very good relationship with most people. He's a Westerner like Enzi. I don't, you know, and so I'm sure he knows him quite well and has worked with him on things. It'll be interesting. Obviously, all the other neocons that are sort of not in Congress will be joining their entertainment buddies and will be, all the Bill Kristols and all of them will be supporting Liz Cheney. But I would think that's where McCain would come down. I would think that, it's in his interest to do that.
Interesting.
So, I mean, it's the policies he seems to believe in feverishly. Anything, he is in his own battle, as I said in the beginning there, with Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. So anything to sort of weaken Rand Paul is a good thing for him, too, because he kind of sees the old sort of guard like him being pushed aside. And McCain doesn't take very well to people disrespecting him. You don't disrespect McCain, man. You don't.
Oh, no,
it.
I definitely.
That's right. Do not taunt John McCain.
No, I will not taunt John McCain. Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, I've yet to really dig into this, but I guess actually carrying on this theme, and forgive me because I'm getting all sorts of tweets that some people are saying that the sound is not good, and some people are saying that it is, and so it's a little bit annoying. But I'm going to go forward as if
you're
it's
a professional,
everything is fine.
Sam.
Exactly.
I
I'm doing my best. Let's talk about this farm bill, because there's a very weird dynamic here. The Senate passed a bill cutting SNAP, cutting food stamps by $4 billion. The House couldn't pass a bill and then could only pass one if they essentially eliminated the food stamps program. So we now have a situation in the event that it actually goes to conference, you know, somewhere in between, I guess, between $4 billion worth of cuts and total $80 billion worth of cuts. And
but they don't want it to go to conference. That's the thing, because the House is scared that the Senate might actually legislate and do stuff, and in conference might add in the food stamps. So they've passed a bill that they actually are trying to slow down and not allow to go to conference. Like, that's the point of ridiculousness that we've reached. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going to happen there. It's amazing.
But
to
the
watch.
Weird
they
thing
also...
is, if it goes to the continuing resolution, right, in terms of just it just gets passed in the budget, I would imagine, then there's going to be no cuts.
Yeah. So I guess that would be even worse. I mean, again, they're kind of in this position that I don't know. I'm not sure what they're going to do. That they're sort of irrational, crazy people, and that doesn't help. Because the options right now that, you know, sometimes you have to do weird stuff like compromise. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. They, of course, did what they always did, which is they loaded up the farm bill full of stuff for agribusiness, you know, once again proving that when they come out and they say how spending is so important to them, whatever, it's not. It's just about hurting poor people and middle class people. Like, that's literally, they literally are just evil people that want to hurt people because they have no trouble spending money on all sorts of other stuff. Right now, they're forcing the Pentagon to accept to buy a bunch of drones that the Pentagon doesn't want because, you know, freedom or something.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about Detroit, if we could. I haven't read enough about this really to have a good sense of what all the factors are. I mean, I think in many respects, people have seen the factors at play for years. Part of it is that you also want you've got an administration in at least Michigan that wants to screw over the pensions of people who have been working in Detroit and working for Detroit over the past, 20, 30 years. This is the largest municipal bankruptcy, I believe, is it in the history of the country? I mean, didn't New York go bankrupt? But
right, in the mid-70s, yeah. When Ford was like, that's a great question. I thought New York did.
Maybe it didn't actually go file for bankruptcy, because my understanding is this is the largest city in the United States ever to do so. And maybe it's the largest physically and maybe not, in terms of and that's one of the sort of the difficulties that Detroit has is that it is such a sprawling city in many respects.
Apparently it's like bigger than, I mean, you combine like New York and I don't know. I heard somebody say, you combine a few cities, you can come into Detroit. And that's part of the problem because keeping up services is hugely difficult. And so that's been a uniquely made Detroit more difficult, but the bigger story, of course, is that this is sort of ground zero for the absolute failure over the past 50, 60 years of neoliberal economics. Like, you could have no better example. And it obviously is on the right, because that's their entire economic policy, but we know plenty of people who are Democrats who've joined in with this. And, you know, because it's not like this hasn't happened in New York, parts of New York, parts of New Jersey, you know, in so many places, Ohio, where I am, where you've lost so much, you've had so much deindustrialization, but a lot of other places at least had some diversity in terms of jobs that were offered, and Detroit relies so much on their industrial jobs, and you know, it's like been this cycle downward of terrible federal policy, terrible state policy, you know, city corruption. And it's almost like people just sort of whistled past the graveyard. You know, they just sat around and they've watched as sort of the South has stolen jobs through their right to work policies that have attacked unions. You know, the federal government shifting investment away post World War II, from the Midwest and Northeast to the Sun Belt, Obviously the our industrial policy is complete crap. We've given incentives for people to move jobs to other places, and on and on and on. I mean, Detroit really actually needs to do something like some other cities have done in the past. I think of Columbus, Ohio. I think of Louisville. I think of others where they've created sort of a broader metro area where the city is joined with the suburbs. Mm. Problem now is there's so much because of the racial, animus and the rest. It's tough to get, even though both sides would actually benefit from this in a lot of ways. But it's a tragedy. I mean, I'm somebody who loves cities and urban history, and these were sort of some of the shining beacons of this country. Detroit at one point may not have quite rivaled New York, but certainly Chicago is an economic powerhouse in this country.
Yeah.
And an important part of the story of this country. And that we've allowed this to happen, it's just shameful. I don't know how else to put it. I would say to people, and I say this to you, my history advisor, my undergrad, a guy by the name of Tom Segrew, wrote a fantastic book called The Origins of Urban Crisis, Race and Inequality in Postwar Detroit, which I would recommend for anyone to read to really get an idea of what happened there so that you're not listening to the garbage coming out of right-wing supposed think tanks about what happened there.
Yeah, we may actually even have him on in the coming weeks or so. Just a couple of facts about Detroit. My understanding is that the while you've got a city that could fit, I think, the landmass of like Boston, San Francisco, and New York all in one place, the population is half, over half. I mean, I should say less than half of what it was in 1950.
Right. So, 1.8 million, and it's fallen to 700,000.
Exactly.
About.
Exactly. And that's stunning because you have half the tax base, right? But you still have to cover as much ground, and you still have to pick up the trash.
Right.
The fact that you don't have as much trash being generated doesn't necessarily save you. You still got to buy the same amount of trucks. You still have those on the road because you got to cover the same amount of territory. You've got low tax revenue because people are leaving, and of course the industries have died out there. Then that also brings in a certain amount of crime and blight, and then you have Detroit owing money to its creditors. And lawyer Matthew just IM'd me, said that New York came close but never actually filed for bankruptcy. And
so there you go.
And this is a Chapter 9. This is a Chapter 9 bankruptcy, and in Chapter 9, as opposed to like Chapter 7 or Chapter 11. You can't sell off your assets to pay off creditors. It's just basically you are getting protection to rework and basically protection from your creditors.
Well, in a way, that's probably a good thing because, as we know, what Republicans particularly and some Democrats, too, around the country have done, the privatization of services where they sell these things off at 10 cents on the dollar and basically allow private entities to take over what used to be done by the public and make a huge profit off of it. The services inevitably get worse, and they tend to end up charging you more for it.
Right.
What a shocker. So in that way, at least that part of the bankruptcy is good. I mean, bankruptcy at all, I'm saying, the fact that this happened is terrible, but I'm glad that they won't be selling off their assets.
Yeah. Now, the thing to watch here, though, okay, is of the creditors who are involved, I guess there's about $18 billion. That includes $6 billion in health care and life insurance obligations, and then $3.5 in pension obligations. And then, I guess, presumably about another $9 or $10 billion to bondholders, primarily, I would imagine. And so the real question is, who is going to take the biggest haircut? And so this is the thing to watch.
Right.
Who is going to who's going to lose out here? And,
and mind you, we wouldn't want to bail out Detroit because we've never bailed out any other large entities.
Right. Right.
For vast amounts of money that didn't deserve it and committed criminal acts far worse than anything that's happened in Detroit.
Right. We're talking about $18 billion. This was the cost of, I think, what, a week and a half in with our two wars at one point. But yeah. The
cost of like one toilet at Goldman Sachs.
The idea of spending that much money on creating suffering seems to be far more appealing to our establishment than actually spending that kind of money on alleviating suffering in this country.
That's about right. Yeah.
Sadly. And all right. Finally, let's. I talked about this briefly. I think on the better half of the show, but the. There's a Christian conservative, I had to talk to you about this just because I know that you would enjoy this story. The Christian conservative group, Media Strategies, I think it's called. These are the people who did a lot of media strategizing for a lot of Tea Partiers, including Michelle Bachmann. They are engaged in a huge lawsuit, organizational lawsuit, I guess, because the CEO was perceived by his employees as sort of straying from his.
Based here in the great state of Ohio, too, by
yes.
the way. And we're very proud of our the Christian nuts who fight amongst themselves here.
So the employees felt that the guy had become, I don't know, a sinner or just like was going a little crazy, and they staged this religious and professional intervention, which ended apparently with them laying their hands on him in a religious fashion, I should say. And there's a whole treasure trove of emails and texts that have come out through the discovery process of this lawsuit. And it's really, really insane. But one of the highlights of this, well, Cliff, I'm going to let you do the honor because we found out that they sent something.
There's some very kind and caring people over there, these Christian consultants, and they were concerned. This may explain the distant look in Michelle Bachmann's eyes. apparently, she was suffering from some migraines or something,
which is not funny.
No, migraines aren't funny. Michelle Bachmann's kind of funny. So they wanted to make her feel better. So they decided they would send out somebody to get her a head massager, and they'd send that to her. The problem is, when they got the head massager and sent it to her, it didn't really massage what they thought it was going to massage.
Yeah, they sent her basically a vibrator from Brookstone.
You could call it more of the Marcus massager, I think.
Yeah. And apparently they intercepted the package before she opened it.
In her office, I think,
yes.
If I understood it correctly. Sounds like a real Mission Impossible kind of scene where somebody had to parachute in maybe through the window or something and make sure that her hands didn't become defiled forever by opening this package and encountering a vibrator.
Indeed. Yeah, that would have been the horror. The horror. Well,
it probably would have helped her politics to a large degree, relaxed
her
a bit.
Now, we should also say that my understanding is that her ethics complaint has now been referred to the ethics committee. And, the question is, will she get out of will she make it to the end of her term before she starts getting in trouble for a lot of the sort of election campaigning shenanigans she was
for these vibrator related chicanery?
Indeed. Well, the vibes on the street I'm getting are an hour.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that could reverberate through the Republican Party. Yeah, I know. We could do this forever, couldn't we?
I know. It's true. Cliff, I appreciate – well, there's one more thing I wanted to actually just touch on and
yep.
just get your sense of how this is going to play out, because the rates for insurance, or at least all accounts for insurance in the exchanges anyways in New York State are now projected to be less than 50% what they are now for people buying individual
insurance.
I saw
that. That's amazing, yeah.
And now this is a unique situation because New York State had already had what they called
pre-existing condition
mandated
coverage, right?
issue. In other words, the insurance companies had to provide insurance, whereas there was not a mandated subscription, essentially, by consumers. They were
right.
not mandated, and that created more expense, and now that's going to change. But couple that now, so we're not going to see those type of cost decreases across the country. Couple that with a report out that suggested anywhere from like 400 to 900,000 people are going to quit their jobs because of the availability of insurance through these exchanges, which, you know, I think we're, I would imagine we're going to hear from some people on the right who say this is horrible. There was a study that was distributed by the National Bureau of Economic Research. It has not yet been peer reviewed, so people got to take it with a grain of salt. But from what I've read, these economists are considered to be fairly rigorous. Somewhere between 530 and 940,000 Americans might quit their jobs after January 1, 2014, when they can get affordable health insurance. Isn't this the point? I mean, this is what freedom is supposed to be.
I was going
to
say, isn't their whole tagline freedom, that you get to choose? I mean, of course, unless you're a woman and it's your body, but otherwise, everybody has the freedom to buy a gun and not know how to use it, so you shoot yourself in the nuts, and the freedom to just pick up and put that flag with the snake on your car and drive around and be an American and pump stuff into the atmosphere that kills us all in 50 years. I mean, that's what it's about, right?
I mean, this is one of the fundamental aspects, I think, of what just sort of is the big divide here when it comes to, you know, we have a lot of libertarians who call this program, is that their definition of freedom seems to have, you know, if there's anything that involves economic coercion, that's not real coercion. As long as you have a choice that does not involve going to prison, every other choice you can make is completely free of any type of coercion. They do not recognize the fact that, I mean, you know, I cannot tell you how many things that Nikki and I have had to do over the past 5 or 7 years to get health insurance. Specifically for health insurance purposes. I mean, this seems to me, you know, if Nick was untethered from trying to get health insurance, or I was untethered from trying to get health insurance, we would be making a lot different choices in our lives.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know, I always thought the Democrats missed this in a big way when Obamacare happened, because I can say this as someone who's started my own, you know, small business, which is, that was always the biggest concern. That was the scariest thing when I went out on my own and did things, was, you know, am I going to, you know, are they going to find a pre-existing condition and claim we can't have it? You know, are we going to get just robbed by it? Or, you know, and, you know, to me, this should have been a big selling point. These Republicans always talk about entrepreneurial ventures and they love the entrepreneur and get, I mean, well, the biggest thing, one of the biggest things I think that holds people out, you know, back from going out there, especially people who have families and taking a kind of risk to start a business, is that they're worried they're not going to have health insurance. You'd think this would be a good thing. But nothing's ever a good thing with them, or at least if, you know, Obama's for it, it has to be bad somehow. And communist and Kenyan and whatever. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Exactly. There's all sorts of coercion, you know, that we use all the time in our policy. It's the way it goes, frankly. Right. But I mean, you know, it's weird. It's a split because, as you said, there's the Republicans who just believe freedom. You know, it doesn't matter what that means. You have no responsibilities. It's kind of like you're a child in a playground. You get to do what you want and whatever. And then there's the other side that believes in strong accountability. And they obviously mix and match, because part of that accountability is only for other people. So if you're poor, it's your fault and you get no food stamps because you're living high on the hog, even if I'm Joe Republican taking $300,000 in farm subsidies. So they pick and choose. But that's where the individual mandate came from eventually, the belief that you actually had responsibility to have health care and be a part of the system. But then the freedom lovers took over. And so I don't know. You know, you never know who's going to win. I'll just remind you that Dick Cheney, who was going to be coerced into going to the military, had a nice little present called Liz Cheney 9 months later, so he can get his deferment. So there's all sorts of ways to get out of that kind of coercion, if you know what I'm saying.
That's what I understand. Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for joining us today. Sorry about the technical Chazarai, as it were. I will endeavor. I will endeavor to make this work if it's the last thing.
I didn't even notice, Sam. It was all fun. Just keep yourself cool in what I'm sure will not be a cool weekend.
Yes, indeed. All right, Cliff. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you
soon.
Sure.
Take care, man.
All right, folks. Going to take a quick break, and hopefully, without much Cirrus, as it was, we will have. Isabel Gillies join us. We'll be right back after this and give us some movie suggestions. Cedar on the Majority Report. And joining us in just a moment and to give us a film recommendation for the day, of course, she hasn't been with us now in over a month, ladies and gentlemen, Isabel Gillies. But before we get to Isabel Gillies, let's get to the Isabel Gillies theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
That's right, IsabelGillies.com. Isabel, welcome.
Hi, I couldn't hear it.
You couldn't hear any of it?
I couldn't hear any of the theme song, which depresses me because it's only once a month I get to hear it.
I'm sorry about that. Let me try again. Let me see if you can.
No, it's okay.
What about this? Can you hear that?
Is casual.
Did you hear it?
No.
Oh, that's weird. No, it's not weird because I can't seem to get anything to work today. But I'm sorry about that, Isabel, but it's great to have you here. I can assure you that it sounded great.
Well, it's super great to be here. And I have to say, well, there's two things happening.
Yeah.
One,
really?
I'm looking at a...
Just
at
two things?
Yeah. Well, I'm up in Maine, first of all.
You're way up in Maine, northern Maine, right? You go way up north.
Well, it's mid-coast Maine.
Mid-coast?
Yeah, you could drive for 5 more hours in Maine.
Maine is huge. And so you're on the coast of Maine, way up north, right?
And yeah, way up north.
What do you do? Do you go swimming?
Well,
do you,
here's like the thing. So there's two things happening.
This
one,
is where your family,
I'm
your
at my parents' house.
Right?
What?
You're at your parents' house, right?
Yeah, I'm at my parents' house. And I'm looking at the window, and I see that the lawnmower people are here.
The
so
lawnmower
really
people?
Loud.
Is that what you call them?
Yeah, the people who cut the, you know, mow the lawn.
Okay.
They come once a week. It just might be loud. That's all.
That's all right. I don't even hear it.
It's loud. Okay. And two, honestly, at 12:36, so about, I don't know, 10 minutes ago, I finished the last page of my editing on my book.
Holy cow. That's amazing. Let me give you one of these. You can't hear it, I don't think, but
I hope it's applause.
Well, it's close.
Or trumpet.
It's a trumpet. It's actually now it's trumpet. It was a shofar before, but now it's a trumpet. So, Isabel Gillies, the best-selling author of two books now, is just finished
right.
her third. And this is a tweener, right?
This is a teener.
Teener.
And a teener, maybe tweener. And it's a novel. So it's, you know, not a memoir. But and I have still, because it doesn't, I don't hand it in like forever. I don't see it again until October 1st. But the big hard part is when you get the manuscript back and you need to edit. It's like, you know, in fourth grade when you get your paper back and there's all the red marks all over it.
That never happened to me. All of my fourth grade, everything was perfect for me.
Well, that I got a lot of red marks. And in fact, I took the, for Everybody Reads Week, which is in the public school system. There's Everybody Reads Week, and at PS 57, you were invited to go, and I was invited to go and talk to the kids about, you know, writing books.
Why wasn't I?
So I but do you write books?
I wrote a book.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
What's
FUBAR.
It called?
FUBAR.
What's it called?
FUBAR, America's Right-Wing Nightmare. Go on Amazon. You can, I'll just check it out.
Well,
of course,
I'll talk
I'll give you
to
a
Jilly,
copy.
Who works in the library, and get you in there next
yeah,
year.
Yeah, it's probably not an appropriate book for kids.
No, but that doesn't matter. You can talk about the process, and you talk about all this, you know.
The process for me was just the guy, that we had seven meetings with our editor, and every time we were talking about the cover. It was the one time when I realized, like, you know, people say don't judge a book by a cover. It seems to me that the publishing world, that's all they do. You got to
in.
You got to say you have to have a platform now to sell a book, which means that you have to have either a radio show or a TV show. You have to have some type of celebrity so that you can go on the tour if you have a big podcast.
The talk shows.
Yeah, but some.
Well, don't you judge books by their cover? Because I really do.
Well, now I do everything on Kindle, so no.
Oh. Oh, well, what about in the bookstore?
I never have time to go into bookstores. I don't have time to go anywhere. All I'm doing is trying to fix, you know, the technical problems with the show and do the show. That's all I do now.
Well, I kind of get that because that's all I've been doing is the
baby.
Book stuff. Huh?
I'm dealing with a four-month-old baby.
I know. How is that little baby?
The pediatrician said yesterday that my four-month-old son is the size of an average eight-month-old baby. He's a monster.
He's a big one.
All right, so wait a
That's
second.
That's good.
So that there's two things you've learned. One, you went in to do this talk with the kids to read the book, yeah?
Oh, yeah. So I brought my manuscript in, which was kind of scary because if you lose that manuscript, you're really up the creek. So I brought my manuscript in.
You don't have a copy of it?
Looking at all these, what?
You don't
no,
have
a, yes. It's the only copy of it because it's, you know,
what?
She hand corrected it.
Oh, well, why didn't you photocopy it before you did that?
Because I'm not like that.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
But that's not in my personality, but you're right. I should have.
All right.
I should maybe do that even now except that I'm done. But I'm so scared of it in the computer that I have to send it to my agent for safekeeping. I'm so scared that it's going to, you know, suddenly my computer will break. Or I mean, it's terrifying. So anyway, I took in the manuscript copy with all the red marks on it, and I said to the kids, a bunch of fourth graders, I was like, so who gets their papers back, you know, with red marks on it? And they're all like, I do. And I was like, well, check it out. I'm 43. And I flopped this 400-page manuscript on the library table, and then they could look at all the red marks, and they're like, whoa. But my editor, every once in a while, will do a little smiley face when I get something right. And so they thought that was funny.
Yeah, it is
They're
funny.
Like, oh,
did you get, like, stars, too? Did you get, like, a cookie?
Well, let me tell you something. When you are correcting for, like, day after day, hour after hour, and you're just looking at nothing but mistakes, that little smiley face is an oasis in the desert.
And so is your editor excited about this, or do they always
yeah.
have to pretend like they're excited?
No, I think she is, because there were two whole tries that she was like, no thanks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this is a good one.
Yeah,
so,
unless it's like, fine, this is great, and that's it. Like, I don't
no,
have the energy
like,
to do this one more time.
Well, hopefully, I don't know. We'll see next fall.
So
Not
it comes,
this fall.
The book comes out next fall.
Book comes out next fall.
Like a
and
year
I'll be
from
talking
now.
About another. Yeah.
Wow, that's a long time from now.
I know.
Why so long?
Because it takes, you know, they have to put you on a schedule, and then they have to make it. They have to make this book, and they have to do copy editing and all these things and go to the lawyers and do all that. And then, they, you know, It takes a long time.
You need me to do the book on tape, or does it not make sense to have a guy?
I'll do the book on tape.
You'll do the book on tape.
Yeah.
Right.
I did my first book on tape.
You did?
And then I didn't do my second book on tape.
Who did your second? Why?
An actress, and I don't remember her name, but
not
because
good.
I wasn't good. It was a mistake on my part because I was trying to fit. I was trying to write this book, and I just was feeling like I didn't have any time, and it was
any
just
time,
a bad call.
Any time? It takes 8 hours. That's all.
8 hours? It took me 4 days to do my first book.
Okay, 4 days.
I know. It was a mistake. What can I tell you?
32 hours.
Everybody makes mistakes. So yes, they do. Oh my gosh! Do you know that I just recalled? I think it might be from Sesame Street. My father used to sing to me. Ready? Everybody makes mistakes, so yes, they do.
Wait, what is going on?
Brother, mother, sister, and you two.
Is this going out on there? What is going on? Are you okay?
Well, I just said everybody makes mistakes, and then it reminded me of that song, and I guess because I'm living with my parents for the summer.
How is that going? Do you get in fights with your parents?
No, we have it down, because there's kind of two sides to the house.
I assume your kids are with you, too, right? It's not just you sent away by your kids to stay with your parents.
Oh, no, I've got 3 kids here.
Oh, really?
Puppies.
Wow.
You know, the whole, and actually Peter's here for his 2-week vacation.
That's great. He gets 2 weeks in a row, huh? I'm going to be taking 2 weeks over the next month and a half as well. But mine is really more just a sleep train Saul. So that's not going to be.
You're just going to sleep.
No, I'm going to sleep train Saul.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, don't forget the 5 S's.
Shushing. Sucking, swaddling, swinging, yes, but we're past that now. He can't, you have to use like a king-size sheet to swaddle the kid. He's just too big.
I know, so you just have to put him in the room and let, some pediatrician said, put them in the room, let them scream, and don't go in unless there's blood coming out from under the door.
You know, that is basically what we have to do, but I can't, you know, I have to be the one to do that.
Why?
Well, because it's hard. It's too hard for Nick. She can't.
I know.
You know, it's, you know, and Saul doesn't, you know, scream bloody murder like Mila did as a kid. But the problem is that Mila didn't get to sleep until 6 months ago, and she's 8.
Oh.
So we got to do this.
You got to really do it. It's good for them in the end. They have to know how to sleep by themselves.
Listen, I don't need to be sold on this. It's just that. You know, I can't come in and do my show without, you know, having stayed up all night, which is what I'm going to have to do for a week. And
no,
so,
it's 2 days, not a week.
That's what everybody says. But my kids are really problematic. There's something wrong with our wiring in my children, I think. I mean, and I'm it probably comes from me, but probably Nikki.
From you being a what?
I was saying it probably comes from me, but then I sort of really said the real truth, which I'm convinced it comes from Nikki.
Yeah, just blame Nikki.
Yeah, of course.
I cried in the bathroom. I remember sitting there crying in the bathroom while my son screamed his head off.
Really? And were both your kids the same way? I know this has got to be fascinating for people, but I need to know.
I know. Isn't it? God, is this boring. But no, they're good sleepers, I will say.
Well, you're very lucky. Now, what, Isabel, last time you were on, what movie did you recommend? I have a movie recommendation for you, but what movie did you recommend?
But I've got such a good one that it's maybe my best one.
What was the one that you recommended last time?
The skateboard movie.
I didn't see it. What was it called
again? The skateboard documentary.
What was it? Oh, the skateboard documentary. I don't remember that. But
did you see the one before? Are you watching these? Because I'm on fire.
I'm watching some of them. Not all of them. I can't watch all of them.
All right, well, listen.
I watched Secrecy.
It's imperative.
What? Okay.
That you watch this.
All right.
It is imperative.
Hold on. Let me tell you what I'm going to recommend to you.
It is imperative.
I'm going to recommend the Crash Test. Crash Reel. The movie by the woman who did Wasteland. The filmmaker. You can see it on HBO. Or if you happen to have somebody else's HBO Go passwords.
Wait. That's what I'm recommending, an HBO movie, too.
What is it?
It is a documentary directed by Sebastian Unger about the war photographer Tim Hetherington.
Tim Hetherington?
Who is a famous war photographer, and he died in a battle It's called Where's the Frontline?
Where's the Frontline?
Google that, because I'm not near a computer. I think that's what it's called.
You're recommending
about the
a movie, but you don't know what the name of it is?
No, I just went to a different phone, so I don't have the exact wording, but I think it's called, it's a documentary about the life of Tim Hetherington, and he was probably one of the greatest war photographers that ever lived, and he died tragically, but not really tragically, because he was a war photographer and he was on the front lines in Libya.
Which way is the front line from here?
There we go. Because in the documentary, he's in a car, it starts out, and he actually says to Libyan rebel, which way is the front line from here? He always wanted to be on the front line. So he started taking pictures in Liberia. He went to Sierra Leone. He took all these wars in Nigeria, Afghanistan, and he would get so up in it and so close, and he took the most riveting, heartbreaking pictures of war, and he was such a nice guy, this big, tall, lovely man, and I'm telling you, my mouth was open. Do you like Sebastian Unger?
Sure.
Right? I mean,
why not?
What's not to like?
Those war photographers, they're a little bit crazy.
I know. Well, but it's true. This guy wasn't crazy, but he is empirically crazy because you're.
It sounds like you have a little bit of a crush.
Well, you do kind of get a crush on him.
On the war photographer.
Everybody does.
Okay.
I don't care who you are.
All right.
Because he's so kind and so good, and he was so good at what he did, and he had this thought about, like, because he went all over the world to these wars,
yeah.
And he's English. And so he noticed that all the men reacted differently than the women to war. Like the warriors all had kind of, if you were American, because he was in Afghanistan a troop, I guess. What are they called?
Yeah, I don't know.
One group of military guys. He was embedded with them.
Okay,
for like a year.
Platoon.
Platoon.
Okay.
And he studied sort of males in war, and it is so interesting. I mean, watch it tonight. Watch it tonight.
All right. Which way is the front line? Maybe I will do that.
I mean, everybody should. It's so good.
Now, where is this on? It's on HBO.
HBO.
Oh.
HBO Go. But when I was looking, I saw it.
I could maybe hand out my dad's HBO Go. passwords to everybody so they could all download it and watch. That would be inappropriate.
But
not everybody has HBO.
Can you watch it on Hulu, though, or something?
Well, what about Netflix?
I know, but I don't think it's on Netflix. I think it's on HBO. Mm. I didn't look. But remember we said that was a rule, that if it was any kind of home system.
All right. Well, then fine. That'll be fine. And maybe people, there's other ways to watch movies. My understanding is, I've read about it, something called BitTorrent. I've only read about it. I don't know anything else about it.
Is there anything else cool going on in the world?
Well,
a little bit out of it.
No, everything's fine, Isabel. It'll all be here when you get back, unless
you tragic picture. Of the insecticide.
The tragic picture of the insecticide?
The insecticide that the kids ate.
I don't even want to talk about that. In India, no, that's just too painful.
I can't get it out of my head.
Well, it's difficult. Now, let me ask you this. Is Bill de Blasio going to get get it together or what? Are we going to have Anthony
Weiner? How's it doing? I hope so, but yeah. What's going on with Chris? Listen, the primary is the big deal. That's in
It's going to end up being Wiener.
No.
I think there's a good chance.
But
I do have some good news for you, okay?
What?
I do have some good news, and that is that by the time you're back, in fact, fairly shortly, we're going to have an app. Do you have an iPhone?
Yeah, I have an iPhone.
Okay. Well, we're going to have an app, and it's going to be the easiest thing in the world for you to listen to the show on your phone.
Oh, you're getting an app?
Yeah, just for
you. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And, you know, you can look at other people's podcast apps, but our man Kyle has created something that is going to put other people's podcast apps to shame. And I don't care who they are. I don't care how big their operation is. I don't care how much revenue they have. It doesn't matter. This is going to put theirs to shame.
Well, I'm going to download that.
I know.
That
it's made
mother.
Specifically for people like you who have no idea how to access a show online. All right.
I know. It's and also you know, I can do the iPhone. I'm hip with that groove.
Okay. That's great.
Wait, Art, can I come in again? Because that was the most fun thing. And I like being on in the real
in the flesh.
Studio.
Yes. Well, no.
Once you have a bit of the honey, you just can't.
I don't know.
Like,
does your husband know that you talk to me that way? What do you mean by that?
What?
What? What do you? What do you? You're talking about going into. You're talking about going
in. I tasted the honey.
I understand. Well, when you get back in the fall, we'll bring you in. You'll be in studio
I know,
all the time.
Let's just say one more time that everybody in New York should vote for Bill de Blasio. Seriously.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I don't think it's going to happen, but we'll see. We don't have
it's
quite that.
It's going to be exciting. I don't quite want to get excited for the fall yet because it's still the summer.
Yes,
I just finished my book 25 minutes ago, so I need a vacation.
And congratulations to you.
Thank you. I'm a little bit excited for the fall, too, because of the election and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's going to be terribly exciting, and hopefully we'll have found a new apartment by then, but highly unlikely. I think Saul's
going to be sleeping. And then maybe we can do our show.
Yes. Well, we've got a lot of plans, Isabel. But now I must say adieu, and we'll talk to you hopefully one more time. Yeah, while
let me just say one more time. Tim Hetherington.
Okay.
Which way is the front line from here?
Which way is the front line from here? We will do that. Isabel Gillies, always, always a pleasure. You know that.
Then the pleasure's mine, Sam. The pleasure's mine.
Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. See you in a month.
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, you know what we're going to do? We have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake that he has sent in. This is, I guess, a function of... let me see here. What does Jimmy write to us about the... In light of the Zimmerman verdict and the discussion of these screwed-up gun laws, I offer you my remix of this classic fan favorite. Psycho Redneck Outlaws. I pumped up this track with more guitars and vocals and vocal effects, so it's ready for the new album. Please let the listeners know, after your show tomorrow, I am making the song available for free download on the Jimmy Reefer Cake Facebook page. Please like me on Facebook, he says. They can actually play and download all kinds of Reefer Cake songs for free on the Jimmy Reefer Cake Facebook page. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is the song of the week. It's from Jimmy Reefer Cake, and it's called Psycho Redneck Outlaws.
Oh yeah, we gotta do it. Get these gun laws in control. Oh yeah, we better do it. Or Psycho Redneck's gonna kill us all.
Trayvon Martin, one of the many deaths, I'm sorry to say. You can blame on the psycho rednecks, the Bush family, and the NRA. These psycho redneck outlaws got fears that are pathological. These so-called stand your ground laws are anything but logical. Come on. Oh, oh yeah, we gotta do it now. Get these gun laws in control. Psycho redneck's gonna kill us all. Trayvon wasn't even armed with a pocket knife. Still, this psycho redneck outlaw decides to take his life. Psycho redneck chasing down a kid half his size. Like our psycho redneck country started a war based on lies. Come on, sing it. Oh, yes, we can do it.
Get these gun laws in control.
right, Jimmy Reefcake. I don't have my applause button, but we'll give you some of that there. All right, we're going to take a break. Head to the better half of the program, folks. The number is 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. Matt and Mike Monday on Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday. Got a lot of great guests planned for you. The number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. I think I need to get a new mixing board. And in that case, certainly use your support. I've been talking about the app. You're going to love it. It's a little pricier than the one that we had planned earlier, but the one that we had planned earlier was never even made. So you really get what you pay for. But you can become a member at majority.fm to support the show by buying your coffee, justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Go to our homepage at majority.fm, click on the Amazon link, bookmark it, buy all your Amazon crap there. You get a little bit of a kickback. Want to be a part of the program today? 646-257-3920. See you in a sec. We are back. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of the program, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to the phones. We got Stephen in Washington State. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Hey, Sam.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey, yesterday I really enjoyed your interview. But I noticed it was a little less than 30 minutes. And yes. Amy Goodman normally does interviews that are, you know, 30 to 5 to 37 minutes long.
That's true. That's true.
And
it's true.
$10 a month, I mean, I feel like maybe I need to be talked into continuing my membership.
Well, Stephen, all I can tell you is that there has been occasions where I actually have done a 38 to 43-minute long interview, and in that instance, I did not raise.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, so it averages out, buddy.
It seems like your 38-minute interviews are normally recorded the day before, which makes them totally obsolete. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It's a tough road to hoe here. I don't know what I can tell you,
yeah.
Stephen. But
I did want to say it kind of made sense that the pretentious lady making these complaints prefers WTF. I'm just going to put that out there.
Wow. Shot across the bow.
I don't think anyone was surprised by that.
Yeah. I mean, I was. I mean, she really, you know, what really bothered me about this, and usually, you know, it's been a while. Usually this stuff doesn't get under my skin, but what really bothered me about it is that it was
She's been doing this for 2.5 years almost, complaining about the show. And, you know, at one point I just said, like, look, I think it's best if you're not a member because it's quite clear to me I'm never going to satisfy you. And that was the end of it. But then she continues, and now she's doing it on our Facebook page, which is even that much more annoying. So it got really annoying for me.
Hey,
I appreciate the call.
I just wanted to let you guys know you're doing a great job.
So. Well, thank you. That's very kind. I appreciate that.
Keep it up.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve. All right. Let's go to a couple IMs here. It's Friday, folks. It's Friday. I'm just a little bit in disarray. No matter how much I try and set up this remote location, I always have problems, weird problems. Computers crashing, keyboards that I hit the letter A, and all of a sudden, like, a whole row of letters come up above it. None of it makes any sense. Let's go to Kevin, 11721. GOP thinking on Liz Cheney split the women's vote away from Hillary Clinton. I'm not even sure I follow that. Are you saying from what kind of perspective? Are they going to split the women's vote? You mean in Wyoming? I don't get it. Kevin 11721. And New York City was bailed out by the teachers union buying $150 million in bonds back in the 70s. Now Bloomberg's thanking them with a big FU. Well, he's not just thanking them with a big FU. I've got to get back into the swing of things in terms of getting people on to talk about education. But I'm really, really concerned with what's happened in this in terms of education, in terms of also the sort of demoralization of teachers. I spoke to I can't remember her first name, Eskelson. She's one of the VPs of a teachers union. And, she brought up a good point in terms of, like, we were talking about my daughter's teachers, you know, said that the teachers that come up today, they don't even have the model of people of teachers who were able to sort of form their own curriculums and didn't have to teach to the test. And it's really sort of problematic in terms of them feeling more motivated and empowered. But we'll talk more about that in the future. Lawyer Matthew. City neared bankruptcy during the administration of Mayor Abraham Beam, but avoided that fate with the aid of a large federal loan in 1975. Ted, Berlin has 60 million euros debts. I don't know what that means, but they are lucky. They are the capital of Germany, and the others pay. I see. 60 billion in euros in debts. Also for the new disastrous projects like the airport fiasco. Interesting. Carl Sagan, plenty of positive and negative factors are occurring simultaneously here in Detroit. Corporate entities have revitalized the core of downtown. The city government has been resistant to any outside help, not to mention the legacy of corruption left by Kwame Kilpatrick. The greater suburban Detroit area has shown itself willing to raise their mileage to save Detroit assets like the zoo and the art museum. I don't know what that means, their millage. The State House also approved a regional transit system that will serve all three surrounding counties, which is a huge leap forward for us. Although the governor is Republican, he is mostly practical and is often at odds with the Tea Party-controlled House. The whole political dynamic in this area can't always be informed by the same assumptions one might be inclined to have when looking at it through a national lens. And I would recommend a nuanced approach because it's complicated and long-awaited beginning to a hopefully brighter future. Yeah, that's why I may go with speak to that guest that that Cliff was recommending, because in many ways it's, you know, urban situations in general are always more, sort of are trickier. And in particular, you know, I think there's a lot of different
things going on in Detroit that are tricky. Nick B. Isabel should use Dropbox or Google Drive to back up. I don't want her to lose her manuscript. One does not have to live in fear. I know. I've told her these things. There are some people who I think just simply refuse to engage in technology because they're adamant that they're not going to in some way, and so they don't. So I know, I know. I should just get a hard drive and back it up on a hard drive. Number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 if you want to be a part of the program today. Nelly Girl, Peter King, thinking about running for president in 2016. That would be fun for you. Peter King? Peter King. Congressman Peter King? Can anyone confirm that? Peter King. No, not really running for president. That's insane. Nathan Flowers, what's with Isabel and the documentaries? I'm over documentaries. I get enough reality on your show. Give me some good old-fashioned escapism in cinema, please. Jimmy's lyrics were good, poetry, but the music hurt my ears. Well, you know, Isabel comes in and, wait, is that confirmed? He is thinking of running in 2016? You've got to be joking me. That is, I don't even know what to say about that. That's hilarious. He'll never do it. I like Isabel coming in doing documentaries because we have just about everybody else, you know, serves up, you know, narrative films. So Scooter McSaltz, longtime listener, first time instant messenger, became a member after receiving a promotion. I love it. Great job, Sam. Really enjoy the show. Would like you to hear your thoughts on why people are so anti-union. Would also love to hear your thoughts on how to respond to those who say too many people are just popping out kids, sucking down government checks. Well, in the first part, I mean, I think unions, I mean, I think part of it has been a huge campaign of demonization. Part of it is that unions also, I think, in some ways, when there was this cleave during the social emancipation movements in the late 60s between sort of social liberals and economic liberals, I think unions got demonized in that way, and in some respects because you know, there was a lot of racism that still existed in those unions at those times with a lot of blue collar workers. You know, some of it was based in some reality as well. I think also, you know, like I say, there's been you know, some union leaders have been corrupt, and then I think some of it also is that unions did not became too focused on servicing only their members as opposed to using their political strength to improve. You know, there's a story, and I can't remember where I just read this. I think it was in the Jacobin, a piece in the Jacobin magazine about the transit workers or the bus school bus driver strike in New York City. That a teachers union official from the 70s, I can't remember exactly, was said that one of the biggest failures of unions was a failure to push for single payer health insurance. And instead were fighting for their own health insurance, because unions needed to sort of broaden they need to be seen as fighting not just for a narrow set of interests, but for broader interests for all working people. even if you're not in a union, even if you're in a different industry. I mean, part of the success of the Chicago Teachers Union strike, and to the extent that there was success, was a function of them building relationships within the community. And I think that's really that's hugely important. Hugely important. As far as responding to those who say too many people are just popping out kids, sucking down government checks, I would ask them who they're talking about specifically. And are they concerned about the welfare that's going to corporations? Are they concerned about the welfare that's going to people who have, who've bought a home, like the mortgage deduction, mortgage interest deduction? Are they... In fact, there's a great piece by, well, we interviewed her some time ago. I can't remember. I think she wrote a book about this, but it was 10,000 Leagues Under something. I can't remember, but it was 10,000 Leagues Under or something like that by Susan Mettler, I believe her name was, and it was in Washington Monthly. And it gives a great breakdown of, in fact, you know, look for anything that she's written, because she's written about this extensively. I think she did an op-ed that really everyone in this country is on the dole. Everyone in this country is in some way getting some type of government handout in the form of either a tax expenditure or direct payments. And so I don't know what these government checks are that they're, that this person's referring to, but it really, my guess is that they're just, they just don't like black people, because that's usually code word for, I don't like black people. And I have, I don't like them so much that I perceive that they all are getting checks from the government and living the life. Like, one can only imagine just how great it is to, I mean, how wonderful your life is just to be pumping out kids to get those government checks. I mean, it's just absurd. It's just absurd. It is an absurd perception of what people on, let's say, food assistance go through. Rypop Phil. Drones purchased by the military in that massive budget can be moved to surplus and given to other federal agencies or local governments at no cost. Fly the friendly skies. The FBI, concerned about civil rights in Florida, blocked the release of an unarmed 27-year-old autopsy by the Orlando Medical Examiner that was gunned down by an FBI agent on May 22nd. Tell Isabel a document should be able to fit on a cheap thumb drive. New York Republican Peter King has surveyed the 2016 playing field and isn't too keen on what he sees. Yeah, I bet. Oh, I didn't realize that I would have to speak in public. But I don't believe this. But I don't really speak about it in public. Let's go to the phones. Donna in California. Welcome to the program, Donna.
Hey, Sam. I'm a demoralized teacher.
I'm
also
sorry to hear
happy
that.
To be the president of our, yeah, I think we all are these days. I'm also president of our teachers union, and I really appreciate when you cover issues of education, and it's such a frustrating topic because most everybody has interacted with public education system and so feels entitled to have an opinion about it, but most people aren't very well informed about what's going on. And it's like everything else, it's privatization that's happening in the education system and the pressures of the testing companies, educational services that people are selling. So that's a big issue in our district. And I think parents, not just parents, but, you know, we really need a coalition of progressives to start working with teachers, and particularly teachers unions, because teachers unions are simply the representatives, the representative body of teachers.
It's stunning to me and how demonized teachers unions are in this country for some reason. And let me ask you, there's one thing that I'm starting to read about a little bit is, let me get your perspective on the core curriculum Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? I mean, of course you are. But,
you're right, the Common Core.
Common Core. I mean, just tell people a little bit about that and your perspective on it.
Well, Common Core is a federal system of standards that would replace the state standards. And here in California, we've had a pretty rigorous standards. Although the frustration as a teacher, I teach math, for example, and the frustration is that there's a lot of the decisions that get made about what curriculum we cover and how we cover it is happening at a legislative level or in academia, where there isn't a lot of attention paid to the experience of teachers and the developmental abilities of students.
Right.
So, for example, everybody in high school is taking algebra starting in their freshman year, and a lot of those kids absolutely don't have the prerequisite skills to study algebra, and they are just completely demoralized, and they hate math. And it's horrible for me as a teacher to feel like I'm torturing these kids to try to teach them something that I know they're not ready to do.
Right.
And I don't believe that they can't do it. I just think that somewhere along the way, we've had this curriculum that's an inch deep and a mile wide, and we haven't really supported the needs of our students, and we're not teaching them where we are, where they're at.
My understanding is that some people like the Common Core just because it doesn't it makes high stakes testing more difficult to implement in some respects.
Well, it still implements testing. I mean, the idea is that the high stakes testing is now going to be include a little more critical thinking. And
right.
So, for example, all the tests are supposed to be done on a computer. Our school, we're in a, you know, not an impoverished area, but we're not in a high wealth area either. And we absolutely don't have the infrastructure to do that. So it's not clear to me how it's going to be implemented. But, you know, there are parts of it, I mean, like anything in education, there are parts of it that are great, but it's how it's implemented and whether the input is coming from educators who know what they're
right.
talking about. And, you know, something, I mean, like I said, I'm a math teacher, but I'm concerned about there's a de-emphasis, I think, on literature and more on nonfiction and technical writing and things like that. Which,
well, Donna, I mean, what are you going to do with the literature? What are you going to do with literature? You can't really, it's much better to be able to write a copy for Perzaxa or whatever it is. So that's the
exactly.
But
you can't get a job at Walmart with a literature degree. That's true.
That's right. Well, you can.
So,
it's just that it's you're highly overqualified, I guess. But I appreciate the call, Donna.
Okay, and thank you so much for your show. Fantastic.
Thanks for listening. All right, let's go to Ben calling from we lost him. Sorry, Ben. Call back. I apologize. Black Havar, pile on Friday. Oh, Sam, how could you support Herr Obama? Ronald Reagan. Luis Gutierrez is out campaigning for immigration reform. Seems like he might have his eyes on 2016. I know you hate this early presidential speculation, but he's a good progressive that might deserve our support. You might try and get him on, have him on the show. Yeah, I'll look into that. That's a good point. Here, I'll go back to Ben from upstate. Sorry about that, Ben. Ben, you're calling from upstate New York. Welcome to the program.
Okay, you can hear me now?
Yeah. How you doing, Ben?
Okay, all right. First of all, I want to apologize I didn't call in sooner. I accidentally listened to yesterday's show, and that got me diverted. See, I have a bio degree. I'm actually trying to get involved in getting to the biofuels industry, which is an industry that's going to try to use electricity to withdraw carbon from the air and turn it back into usable fuels. Not a lot of hype about it, but during my master's program, I said, oh, this is exactly what I want to do with my life, and hopefully when we develop cleaner fuel technology, lots of solar, lots of wind, And maybe here's a technology nobody talks about. I'm not, the government developed it like in 2003, the pipe dream, but it's called quantum nucleonic, where you use X-rays to excite very, very heavy isotopes of hafnium. I'm not sure if that's practical, but like I'm just trying to give a picture of a futuristic energy landscape. But I digress because I was actually trying to talk about Trayvon Martin, if you'll forgive my digression for a moment. It's just, what strikes me is about the Trayvon Martin case and racism in America is how long we've let people get away with framing the issue in a way they were instructed to frame it in the early 1980s by Lee Atwater. I can't believe that we've let it go on so long.
Well, be more specific as to what you're talking about.
Lee Atwater.
Well,
okay, I'll be very specific. Atwater came out.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Lee Atwater, what he did, he came out and he said, look, here's how you win elections in, you know, prior to 1950. You go out and you say nigger, 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 and you get your votes.
Right.
And then he said, well, okay, after 1950, that doesn't work anymore. So you have to save tax cuts. And of course, that extends to things like food stamps. And that extends to things like welfare. And what he said was, the overall agenda is, whites will benefit, blacks will get hurt.
Right.
Well, that agenda quickly shifted. And now it's not blacks getting hurt, it's just people who are low income. And if Lee Atwater racism has just shifted the burden of society down into the very poorest and the very most helpless.
Yeah.
These people who have been voting Republican on Lee Atwater racism have just, they've doomed their own economic futures. And I think we really need to put an effort into saying, look, you want to talk about welfare, you want to talk about tax cuts, you want to talk about food stamps, you are a Lee Atwater racist. We've seen this playbook, and it's hurt us horribly for 30 years.
I think it is beginning to fail, though. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It has been, and it is why, you combine that with the gerrymandering. Hold on for 1 second. You combine that with the gerrymandering that's taking place in the House districts. That those two factors are going to be why the Republicans are going to hold on to the House for the next 6-7 years, I believe, at least. And,
well, that might be the case, but allowing them to frame the issue.
But what is
without
being
calling
framed
out
here?
For
what
being
is
Lee Atwater racism? Well, is just not acceptable.
Yeah,
for
but
our party
what is? I mean,
Iran.
Yeah, but I don't understand. Like, what is it that I don't understand? What issue are you talking about?
I'm talking about every issue which is allowed to be framed on behalf of racist votes in the South, and coded in such a way as to appear fiscally conservative.
Yeah.
We know this playbook. We've known this playbook for 30 years, and no one has said, oh, Lee Atwater. See, I'm a cruel guy. Somewhere deep down inside of me, I don't think dying horribly of a brain tumor for months wasn't enough for that guy. Yeah. He hurt our country so in such devastating ways.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Lee Atwater, I mean, he wasn't. I agree. It was not. It was not just his strategy. I mean, look, the Lyndon Johnson, when he signed the Civil Rights Act, I think it was the Civil Rights Act,
which has been pulled down. The Voting Rights Act ended.
The Voting Rights Act of it, yes. But when he signed the Civil Rights Act, apparently that night, or then maybe it was the night, but he turned to somebody and said, "I fear that we've just lost." The South for generations.
But look, when I see what Lee Atwater did 30 years ago, why do you have to tell me about a political victory that happened 50 years ago? How much ground have we been losing?
Well, no, but my point is, though, is that I don't think that people know who Lee Atwater is. And I don't think...
That's the problem. That's exactly what I'm talking about. People need to know about this.
Yes,
people
but I mean, listen, Ben, if you could educate people... If you could educate... Ben, if you could educate people, and I'm talking about the broad population, as to who Lee Atwater was, there's a lot more that you could do with that time than educate them as to who Lee Atwater was. I don't, you know, look, you're
well,
not.
Look,
when
I brought
it
up,
is
it you say, what are you talking about? So I have to tell you exactly what happened.
I understand.
Now,
but
if enough people, you do this on MSNBC, you say, oh, you're playing the Lee Atwater, aren't you? They're going to ask, what do you mean? What do you mean Lee Atwater? And then you just say exactly what I said.
Lee Atwater, yes,
label.
That comes up all
it's
the time, but there's
today.
Nobody who watches MSNBC that, you know, I think is who engages in what you're talking about. I mean,
that's
just like
why it needs to be a higher awareness. If you drop it, if you push this fight, if you associate, you got to. It's not hard to make people understand that certain people are associated with certain agendas. I mean, it's not hard to say Reaganomics. It's not hard to say.
Well,
oh,
Reagan was a well-known president for 8 years. And, you know, like people, for instance, you know, people don't know who Grover Norquist is, and he's brought up all the time. Lee Atwater's dead.
Yeah, but Robert Norquist isn't an architect. He's another perpetual.
I understand. I'm just saying that from, I mean, I get what you're saying. I know the background with Lee Atwater, but I'm saying from a political messaging standpoint, that does not make any sense. What makes sense is saying, you know,
I think it's something that it will make sense if you just press it, all right? Everybody loves a pariah to put in the news, and what better than somebody who is truly horrible?
I get that.
And it's not hard to frame it that way either.
If you, well, I get that, but I can assure.
Especially with the internet. You know the quote of the moment that I'm talking about.
Yes, I know the whole thing. I know the whole thing.
Archive and video on YouTube. You say the guy's name, say, go on YouTube, see for yourself.
Yes,
that's
I understand.
That's how I found out about it.
I understand.
It's not hard to inform people about these incidents.
Yes,
in the
I've
internet.
Talked about Lee Atwater in that instance. We've talked about it many times on this show. And despite
I'm just saying start inserting it into debate because that's where they're winning. That's where they get to. That's where they get away with
Ben,
saying.
Do you think
welfare.
That these people who are motivated by this, do you think that they're going to change their mind because it was part of Ben Lee?
I don't at all. I think it's going to force them. I mean, I don't care about changing their mind. I care about changing their their repertoire.
All right. Well, listen, I get a jump there.
The way you speak.
But I appreciate it. I appreciate
I
it. I get your point. That's all right.
Well, try it. Try to bring the guy's name up.
Okay,
right.
I will. Thanks, Lee Atwater. I mean, I get Ben's point here, and you know, it's easy, you know, and we've all at different times had this notion of like, I've got the silver bullet. I've got the silver bullet. If people can just know who Lee Atwater is. But it really is not ever that easy. But I appreciate the idea behind that. Hope Feld, I can't read all of this, buddy, but I will try. Oh, wait a second. News reports say that a Muni bankruptcy filing is a way for a city like Detroit or a county like where Birmingham, Alabama, is to avoid making good on its contractual promises. Why won't GOP libertarians believe in contracts? Aren't contracts holy to them? Why can a city welch on a contractual debt? Sam is a bankruptcy lawyer, but I think government bankruptcy is different from private sector. I'm not a bankruptcy lawyer. I know the pensions from private employers. It is different, but only insofar as they can't sell off their assets to pay off creditors. I know that pensions from private employees are insured by the Pension Guarantee Trust because of the famous liberal Congress of the 1970s passing ERISA, indeed. ERISA only covers private employers. Government workers must rely on the political forces, right, to make good on pensions. The title of Susan Mettler Journal article is called The Submerged State. Yes, indeed. Yes, and she's it's on Amazon. Her name is Susan Mettler. Thank you. Grammar, Uber. Resent and cleave are verbs. Resentment and cleavage are nouns. And never the twain shall meet except on the Majority Report. Indeed. Bartleby, 141, forgive me if this is already covered because I came in very late, but I fear the dismantling of the Voting Rights Act by SCOTUS really gives the GOP a much better shot at presidential race despite demographic trends, especially when you combine it with all the other strategies they're pursuing. Very Machiavellian and scary. I'm not going to discount that theory. I think the irony is that I think their attempts to do this will actually help Democrats in the midterms this time around, because there is going to be a motivating factor to get people to vote beyond actually the candidates. It's going to be they're attempting to stop you from voting. So we'll see about that, but you may be right. Calhoun John, nobody can explain the Common Core. That's part of its appeal. Bush and Chains, Limbaugh, Democrats don't want voter ID because it would be have a very negative impact on cheating. This is what Obama's favorite bank, J.P. Morgan, is doing with your deposits, dumping them into CLOs. If you're stupid enough to have any cash in J.P. Morgan, you deserve what you lose. Shouldn't Majority FM hero Ben Bernanke just print Detroit back into prosperity? After all, deficits don't matter. Sam Seed and Dick Cheney told me that. Yeah, I think Detroit should be bailed out. Hi, Sam. Was browsing through articles while listening to the show. Front page of the New York Times, they just released an article detailing court's ruling to force a journalist to testify against a whistleblower who had been his source in a story. I hope you can get around to discussing this. And it's another attack on our freedom and the press, chilling effect. Send me a link to that at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Adam Baum. This week in Sequester Watch, 3 weeks after the beginning of the summer semester, we still haven't seen student loans, meaning the school is going unpaid and we hold back on buying basics to afford rent. Jay Tingle, what about Ken Lay? Cremated, died at his vacation home during the offseason. His estate was later judged to be immune from civil lawsuits since he had filed an appeal before he died. He was in office. If I were Hillary, I would be quaking at the thought of a Peter King candidacy. Should we use gold to bail out Detroit? And the final IM of the week goes to Avedon. I don't think people knowing who Atwater was helps much. In fact, I don't think talking about racism explicitly helps much. I think the point to keep pounding home are that everyone is getting poorer, whites are getting poorer, and even dying younger, and that's because of cheap labor policies indeed. All right, folks, we'll see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid.